Okay, so we're on the very top of Duff Lamadala. So last time we began the parak and we began the mission began by talking about Ascolon Lulav. So we're going to start off by talking about a related topic, and we're going to start off by talking about Ascolon Sukkah, and then we're going to go back and talk about Lulav and other Sukkah related things afterwards. So we're on the second line down, Toni Rabbanon. So Toni Rabbanon, Sukkah Gazula. So if you have a stolen sukkah, or if you set up your sukkah in the like public domain, then Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible and the Chachamim say it's fine. Rashi explains why the reason that these two cases are put together is that someone who puts a sukkah in their Rishus Harabim, the lands where their sukkah is built doesn't belong to them, so it's another form of stealing. So that's kind of if the actual sukkah is stolen, and the Gemara is going to define what does it mean to steal a sukkah in a minute, or if the land that you're putting it on is not yours, and therefore is related to stealing, there's this machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim whether it's a kosher sukkah or not. So Amar of Nachman, machlokas, v'shetokev eschavera v'hotzio misakoso. So Nachman says this machlokas is only if somebody goes along and takes their friend who's sitting in their sukkah, kicks them out of the sukkah, and then sits in their sukkah. So someone's just eating their Yom Tov lunch, and you go in, you take them, you push them out of their sukkah, and then you kind of take ownership of their sukkah. That's what this machlokas is when the... when it says a stolen sukkah, that's what it means, when you just go and sit in someone else's sukkah after you've kicked them out. Rabbi Eliezer leta ame, and Rabbi Eliezer's opinion makes sense in his kind of halachic world. Because Rabbi Eliezer holds that somebody can't be yotzi the mitzvah of sukkah by sitting in the sukkah of his friend. So the reason why Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible is nothing to do with the fact that nothing to do with the actual stealing, but just the fact that the sukkah doesn't belong to you, and his kind of overall halachic opinion is you can't, your sukkah has to belong to you, otherwise you're not fulfilling the obligation. So we now have this kind of split between which is relating to a different machlokas about whether you can steal land. So we're kind of talking about the sukkah being stolen, or kind of the land the sukkah is built on being stolen. And there's a machlokas about whether you can steal land in the same way that you steal other things, because there's an idea that when you pick something up and then you start using it, you kind of have a sense of ownership over it. Whereas with ground, that's not, you can't like pick it up and kind of do something with it that shows your ownership. So there's a machlokas about whether some of the laws of gazela apply to land, because obviously land is different to things that you can pick up and kind of take with you and use yourself. So, but regardless, it doesn't matter. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion still makes sense, because if you say that ground can be stolen, then the sukkah is stolen. The sukkah doesn't belong to you. It's on ground that you've stolen. So it's just a stolen sukkah, and therefore you can't sit in it because you can't do the mitzvah through stealing something else. But if you say that ground can't be stolen, then it's a borrowed sukkah, it's not yours, and therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's still not kosher. So kind of whatever you fall on that side of the argument about whether ground can be stolen or not, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion makes sense with his kind of halachic principle that you need to sit in your own sukkah in order to fulfill the mitzvah. And similarly, the Rabbonim who say that it's kosher, kind of in their halachic world, that makes sense. That's according to their opinion. Because they say you can fulfill your mitzvah of sukkah by sitting in your friend's sukkah. And they also say that ground can't be stolen. So this sukkah where you've kind of kicked someone out and you're now taking ownership and sitting in that sukkah, according to the Rabbonim, that's fine, because there's no problem with the ground, because they think that ground can't be stolen, and there's no problem with the sukkah, because they think that you can fulfill your mitzvah of sukkah by sitting in someone else's sukkah. So kind of that's where this machlokas comes from, and that's why each of them have their opinion. I can't promise I'll be able to answer questions.
Do you know if it's like just for the first night where it's like a mitzvah minatara, or if it's like a whole...
About like sitting in the sukkah front, I have no idea.
I know like you're not supposed to like go back to previous sukkahs and mishnahs and like be like, well, we kind of decided over there that like...
Exactly.
Yeah, like you are... No, but with like the land being... Like, they kind of decided, like, you, no, not the land, sorry, with, you can sit at your friend's sofa. Like, didn't, wasn't that, isn't that halal?
I did, I like,
having a conversation.
I don't
remember.
Like, you can't even switch sofas, like, even if they're both yours, you have to stay in one.
And but then it concluded, like, oh, that's just the first, no, but first night. Yeah.
No, but you have to stay in a sofa all 7 days.
But the
main
mitzvah is in the first.
No, the right to do it. Not sure about
yamim. That's why the rain days. Thing. But if it's raining like on the first day, then you should.
You have to have a meal.
According to Rashi, this is the Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is quoted on Duff Kaf Zayin on a base. So maybe if you look there, like it might be what Mia's referencing.
Oh yeah, because it's saying base it like in your house or in all, whether it has to be in your house.
Yeah. It's like Yom Tov Rishon Shachar. That's the love Shachar.
Sorry,
I'm taking
off.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But
if we have the reference,
let us know.
Yeah.
So I've lost my place now. Okay, thank you. So this is all, everything you've said so far, kind of apart from the original machlokas, is now Rav Nachman explaining it. So he says the machlokas is only about if you, in that situation where you kick someone else out of their sukkah and you sit in it. Aval gazal eitzim v'sichach bahan divrei hakol ein lo elo demei eitzim. But if you have a sukkah where someone steals the wood and uses that stolen wood to make a sukkah, because that's another way you can steal a sukkah, right? You can take the actual sukkah and make it yours, or you can steal the materials to build the sukkah. So if someone stole the materials and then made a sukkah out of them, everyone agrees that all that the original owner has is the cost of the wood. So this is kind of going into the halachas of stealing, which is that if you steal a piece of wood, if you steal something and then you change it to a considerable amount, then you have some ownership over it. We touched on this last time. If there's a significant change, then you have some ownership over it. So you don't need to actually return it, but you only need to return the cost of it. So if you take wood and then you make it into a sukkah, that's a significant change that the kind of wood is now considered to be yours, so you don't need to return the wood. You can sit in the sukkah, it's fine. You just need to pay back the person who stole the wood from the value of the wood. So you've got kind of the stealing bit that you have to deal with because you have to pay back, but the sukkah is fine, the sukkah is yours, and the wood is considered to belong to you, and the sukkah is fine. So this machlokes about stolen sukkah is not in the case of when you steal the materials. When you steal the materials, everyone agrees the sukkah is kosher. So the Gemara says, Mimai, kind of, how do we know? Mida katani dumya derashis harabim, because in the original statement that we said, it's compared to a rashis harabim, a public domain. Ma rashis harabim karka love didehu, sukonomi love karka didehu. So just like this rashis harabim, the land like doesn't belong to you. Also with the sukkah, kind of the land and the things making the land of the sukkah doesn't belong to you. So we know that in the statement where there's the machlokas, they're talking about a sukkah where the land doesn't belong to you. They're not talking about kind of the materials of the sukkah. It's to do with the land because it's comparable to being in a Rosh Hasharabim where the land also doesn't belong to you. The Gemara is now going to tell a story. It's a bit weird. I tried to like look up different interpretations of it. I found some, but I wasn't so happy with them. It's a bit weird. So Hahi Savta de Osila Kame de Rav Nachman. So there was this random woman who came before Rav Nachman. Omrale, she said to him, Resh Galuta Vakolhu Rabbonon de Be Resh Galuta Besika Gazilla Havi Yosve. The Resh Galuta, so like the head of the people who were in exile when they were exile, there was kind of this I think the official title is exilarch, like just this person who was in charge of them, and also all of the rabbis who are like associated with his household. They're all sitting in a stolen sukkah. So apparently, what appears to have happened is that the Reish Galuta's servants stole some wood from this woman to build her to build their sukkah. Now she's coming to complain in front of Rav Nachman and is saying they're sitting in a stolen sukkah.
Has anyone watched Fish Bazaar, the movie?
Yeah. No, but my dad loves it.
I watch it like every year. I'm like obsessed. And like, there's like a whole stolen sukkah.
So she's like shouting and shouting about the fact that they're sitting in a stolen sukkah, and Rav Nachman doesn't listen to her. He's just kind of ignoring her. She says to him, a woman whose father had 318 servants is standing in front of you crying out to you, and you're not listening to her? Now, Rashi says that this reference to a father is a reference to Avram Avinu. So there's the, when Avram goes to fight Sodom, it says that he took men with him to fight, and there were 318. So again, when I try to look in stories, like trying to look up what the point of her mentioning Avram Avinu was, but again, I couldn't find anything that was like really satisfactory. It was all a bit strange. So she's basically saying to him, like, why are you not listening to me? I'm upset, I'm Jewish, I'm shouting, I'm complaining to you, and you're just completely ignoring me. So Omalehu Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, like, to his students who are standing around, in front of the woman, Pi'ita Hida, the Ein Lo Ela Deme Eitzim Belvad. She's just like someone who talks a lot. Like, it's a bit of like a derogatory, like, oh, just like a chatterbox or like a loudmouth kind of person. Their sukkah is fine. The only thing that she can claim is the value of the wood. So it's kind of links to the thing above, because they've taken the wood from her. So the sukkah they're sitting in, the wood has been stolen. But Rav Nachman doesn't say anything about how the sukkah is possible. The sukkah is kosher, that's fine. They just have to pay her back for the wood that they took from her. So the one explanation I found explains all the details of the story by explaining how, because it wasn't to do with sukkah, it was to do with gazela, which is to do with like money and monetary transactions. He didn't want to talk about it on Yom Tov, and that's why he doesn't really answer her, and he doesn't answer her in the first place, and then he says it to his students instead of her. I just thought it just didn't really sit right with me. It's an interesting one to go and have a look at in more detail. So Omar Avina, Hai Kashura Dematalosa de Gazilla, Avdele Rabbanon Takanta Mishim Takanis Mirish. So Ravina says, and again kind of linking to this kind of issue of kind of stolen things being in a sukkah, if the main beam of a sukkah is stolen, kind of the main structural part of it is stolen, the rabbis made a takana about it, which is the same takana as kind of the beam of a house. So what this is referring to is similar to what we said above. If somebody steals some wood and builds it into the house, again, you don't have to take apart your house and return the wood. You just have to give them the money. And on Sukkot, your sukkah is considered to be the place where you're living, and therefore the same rule as would apply to your house applies to your sukkah. And one of the reasons that I saw for this, I can't remember who says it, but one of the reasons is that when people steal, we want them to, and like the punishment is supposed to be kind of like didactic, to kind of teach them a lesson in order to make them like feel to shiver and not do it again. If you tell someone who's stolen wood that you have to give back that piece of wood and they have to take down their whole house, they're going to become very angry, and they're kind of not going to want to take the message of, oh, I've done something wrong and I shouldn't do it in the future. They're just going to be really angry and upset about it. So as a way of kind of combating that, the rabbi said, it's fine, you can like keep your house, instead give the money back, as a way of kind of keeping the situation calm and kind of diffusing the situation, so people will be more in the right frame of mind to kind of reflect on what they've done wrong, rather than just kind of being angry and defensive about it.
Like getting a button ticket,
like
they towed away every
part. Right.
Would be really angry.
Right. Exactly. I guess. So, Peshitta, this is obvious. Like we've said this before already, and like this should be obvious to us. So Maishnami Eitzim, why would we think that this case with the woods would be different? So Mahu Datema Eitzim Shechiche Aval Hailo Shechicha. So what you could say is that general wood that you use to build your house is really common. Like you can just go and find it anywhere. You can buy it from any lumberer. But the type of beam that you use to make your sukkah is a specific type of wood or a specific kind of shape of wood, and therefore it's not so common. And the kind of rule that the rabbis made only is only to things that are common. Like if you steal someone from something from someone that's really specific that they can't then go and find again easily, then you do have to take apart your house to give it back to them. So you could say that this specific piece of wood that's needed to build a sukkah is like very specific, and therefore you would have to give it back. So this teaches us that that's not the case, and it's fine, it stays in your sukkah. And that's the end of that. So hani milu bigo shiva. So all of this that we've just said about giving back the wood and only giving back the money, it only applies during the 7 days of sukkahs, because during those 7 days the sukkah is considered to be your house. Aval levasa shiva hada be'in ne. But if you, after the 7 days when you're taking down your sukkah anyway, then it's no, it doesn't make a difference to you whether you keep that piece of wood or give it back. Like you're taking down the sukkah anyway, so then you have to give it back. But if for some reason someone has like an indoor sukkah where it's inside the house and it's kind of the wooden beam that they've stolen is cemented into a structure that they're not taking down, then even after 7 days they don't have to return it and they just have to give back the money. Okay, we're going to move on now from talking about sukkah to more talking about the Arba Minim. Specifically, we're going to start off with Lulav and then kind of move on to the rest of them as well. So, Tana, Yavish Posel, Rabbi Yehuda Machsheh. So, if your Arba Minim are dried out, Rabbi Yehuda says, like, it's still kosher and it's fine. Amar Rava Machlokas Belulav. And Rava says this is only a Machlokas when it comes specifically to the Lulav, so not the other the rest of the Arba Minim, only the Lulav is when Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Because if we look at the Mishnah says Lulav Hagozov Ahiyavish Posel. So we have the Tanakhama and the Mishnah who says a dried out Lulav is Posel, and here Rabbi Yehuda who's saying that it's kosher. But according to Rava, this is only about the Lulav, this is not about the rest of the Arba Minim. Darabonin Savri Makshinon Lulav Le'asrug. Because, so the rabbis who say it's kosher, sorry, the rabbis who say it's posel, they are comparing the Lulav to the Esrug. So Ma Esrug Bo'i Hoda Af Lulav Bo'i Hoda. So just like the Esrug needs to be beautiful, because the Posek says you're going to take a pre-eats Hoda, like this beautiful fruit, so too your Lulav also needs to be beautiful. And we're working on the assumption here that like kind of a dried up, withered old Lulav is not something that's beautiful. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Lo Mashkinon Lulav Le'asrug. Rabbi Yehuda says we don't need to compare the Lulav to the Esrug. Like there's no reason to do that. What's interesting here, like just to touch on, I'm not going to go into great detail, is that on about this, Rashi and Tosafos have a really interesting machlokas about like how the 13 principles of like explaining the Torah work, because this is talking about Gezeirah Shavah. Like do we compare the Lulav and the Esrug, or do we not? So Rashi says you're not allowed to like use any of them yourself, any of the 13 midas that you explain to her through. You can't make up any of them yourself. They need to come through like having been taught from teacher to student, except for a Kal V'chomer. Kal V'chomer is the only one that you can do yourself through logic. And Tosafos completely takes the opposite stance and says you can make up any of them except a Gezeirah Shavah, which is why Rabbi Yehuda just never learnt this comparison from his teachers, which is why he doesn't have it, but the rest of the Rabbonon who he's arguing with did. So it's kind of just an interesting, like in terms of like Torah Shavah Al-Pah and how the rabbis are coming up with these things, just like an interesting machlokas here between Rashi and Tosafos.
And it's consistent throughout, like,
if you're
looking to every single...
Well, I haven't learned every single Russian to use this in all of Shas.
Really?
One day. I would assume it's fairly consistent, and if it's not, there probably are people who have commented on why it's not, I would assume, but I don't know for sure. Okay, so we're left with this machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon about whether we compare the Lulav and the Esrug. Aval ba'esrug divrei hakol hoda be'inon. But, and this is still Rava talking again, Rava is explaining this machlokas, or this statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda just says Yovish Posel, he doesn't specify exactly what he's talking about. So Rava is saying, well, it only applies to the Lulav, because the rabbis compare the lulav to the esrog, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't compare the lulav to the esrog. But according to Rava, everyone would agree that when it comes to the esrog, everyone would agree that it has to be beautiful, and therefore you can't use up a withered esrog. Okay, now this statement causes a lot of problems. We're going to go through three different ways where we argue with it, because Rabbi Yehuda does agree, and three reasons why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree, and we're going to disprove all of them until we get to a final conclusion. So, what's the place again? Here we go. A belulav lo bo'i Rabbi Yehuda hada. So the Gemara question says, really, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think that a lulav needs to be beautiful? V'hatanan, Rabbi Yehuda omer ye'agdenu milmala. Rabbi Yehuda said that if the top of the lulav is separating, then you have to tie it together. My time, I love mishim to buy hada. Like, what's the reason for this? Surely it's because we want the lulav to look nice, and it looks nicer if it's kind of all straight and uniform, and not kind of if the top is splitting. So surely Rabbi Yehuda does need it, the lulav, to be beautiful. No, that's not the reason. Kadikatani timer. It's not the reason that. Wait, one second. No. Wait. Sorry. Have I lost my place?
No, not the right place.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry, yeah, so low, no, it's not for that reason, it's for a different reason, because it's a tiny timer, so it's for the reason which is stated in a different Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishnah Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, kapos tamorim. The Pasuk says when it's talking about the lulav, it uses the word kapos tamorim, and the word kapos means like tie up, like Rabbi Yehuda's reading as a command, like kapos tamorim, tie it up. Ve'im hoya porad yechfetenu, and if the top is separating, then tie up. So he's not saying it's because the lulav needs to look nice, he's saying it's because it's from the words of the pasuk. It says kafos means tie up, so if the top is starting to separate, then you should tie it together. Velo bo'i hada, again, are we sure that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need the lulav to be beautiful? But it was tall in ogdenes halulav ela b'mino. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says if you're tying up, when you're tying up your lulav, you can only tie it up using like something, like using another piece of lulav. You can't like just take, I don't know, like one of those like plastic string tie things and tie up your lulav like that. It has to be made from something that is like lulav related. So my timer, what's the reason for this? Love Mishim Deboi Yehuda. Is it not because he wants it to look nice? Like if someone's taking random bits of plastic or like random different coloured strings or different pieces of plant to tie it up, it doesn't look so nice, whereas if you tie it up with a piece of lulav, it all blends in so you can't see it. So surely he says that you need to do that in order to make it look nice. No, that's not the reason. We know that that's not the reason, because Rava says, and seemingly Rabbi Yehuda agrees, that even like the roots or the bits of wood from the lulav tree, from the palm tree that the lulav comes from, can be used, and those things don't look so nice, and you can tell the difference between like the lulav and a piece of bark or a piece of root. So it's just we're gonna see what the reason is in a minute, but it's not anything to do with being beautiful. For Elon, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. So what is the reason there for Rabbi Yehuda? Hosam daka sova lulav tzorach eged v'imesi mina achwina havalihu chamesha minin. So there, kind of Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is that the lulav needs to be tied up, but if you bring a different plant in order to tie up, then you then have five different species instead of four, and that would be the issue of Bal Tosef. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda says you need to tie up using a lulav, nothing to do with what it looks like, but rather to do with not like adding on to the mitzvah. We're going to talk a bit about like Bal Tosef, like it comes up a few more times in the next discussion. Like Bal Tosef and Bal Tigran, kind of how that fits in. So, so continuing the Gemara. The esrog mi bo'i Rabbi Yehuda hada. So the Gemara is now satisfied that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need a lulav to be beautiful. But now we're going to attack Rava's statement from the other side. Rava says everyone agrees that the esrog needs to be beautiful, and the Gemara is asking, like, really, does Rabbi Yehuda need the esrog to be beautiful? But Hatanya, Arbas minin shabalulav kishem she'ein pochsen mehen kach ein musfin alehen. So it was taught that there are like four species that like come with the lulav, and just like you can't have like you can't be missing one, you also can't add on to them. Lo motza asrog, lo yovi, lo prish, for lo remen, for lo davar acha. So if you can't find an asrog for some year, like there's, I don't know, massive drought and none of the asrog trees grow and you just can't find an asrog, you're not allowed to bring. The translation I found for this was quince. I have no idea what that is, but I assume it's like a round kind of fruit. So you can't bring a quince, you can't bring a pomegranate, you can't bring anything else. Like if for some reason you can't find an asrog one yet, like not just because you haven't been bothered to go out to get one, but like actually there are no asrogim, you shouldn't just bring a different fruit. Instead, you just don't bring anything. And in a few minutes, the Gemara is going to kind of come back to this statement and explain it a little bit more. Commotion, kashirin, yavoshin, pasilin. If it's withered, if it's like a bit withered and a bit dry, then it's kosher. But if it's totally dried out, then it's pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af yavoshin. But Rabbi Yehuda says, even if it's dried out. So from this statement of Rabbi Yehuda, we see that Rabbi Yehuda says that a dried up esrog is kosher. So a dried up esrog doesn't look nice. So the Gemara is saying, using that as proof for the fact that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need his esrog to look nice. But on Rabbi Yehuda, now Rabbi Yehuda brings a story to kind of back up his point about how if any of the four minim are dried up, whether that's an esrog or a lulav or hadasim or arabis, if any of them are completely dried up and don't look nice, then they're absolutely fine. He says that they're kosher. So on Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda said, Maisa Bevnei Krochen. So there was a story once of like some people who lived in this city, Shahayu Marishan Esle Levehan Levnei Benehan, and they would like leave their lulavs to their grandchildren. So basically they would hold on to their lulavs, and when they died they would pass it on to their grandchildren. Now if lulavs are being passed on for that long, they're obviously very, very withered up and they don't look nice at all. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, see, like, this is proof. That's what they used to do in this city, and that's proof to my point that whether it's a lulav, whether it's an esrog, whether it's any of the arba minim, it doesn't matter how dried up it is, you can still use it. Omru, this should say lo. So Omru lo, they said to him, this is kind of everyone else replying to Rabbi Yehuda, Mishamraya, like, you can't bring a proof from there. In Shas Hadachakraya, you can't bring a proof from a time of, like, great need. Like, the implication being that in this city, it was very, very difficult for them to find lulavs, for them to get hold of them, and therefore lulavs were something that if they kind of throw away and didn't like pass on between generations, they wouldn't have one at all. And therefore, kind of in that situation, it's better to use a withered up lulav than nothing at all. But you can't use that as like a lechatchila, it doesn't matter if your lulav is dried up. So katani mehas Rabbi Yehuda Omer af yavoshin kashirin. In any event, like regardless of this story that we just read, Rabbi Yehuda still said that even if the arba minim are completely dried up, they're still kosher. My love, esrog, isn't this talking about an esrog? Isn't this talking about all of the arba minim? Lo, alulav. No, it's just talking about alulav. So our initial assumption about the statement was that I was talking about all the arba minim or the esrog, because it's in the context of talking about esrog. But now the Gemara is saying, no, he's actually talking about the lulav. Even though the last statement was talking about the esrog, Rabbi Yehuda is now talking about the lulav. So omama, Ma said, "Kashem she'ein poschen mehen, kach ein musvin alehen." So we're still trying to prove whether Rabbi Yehuda thinks an esrog needs to be beautiful or not. And in order to do that, we're going back to the previous statement that we made a bit earlier, which is just that you can't like take away from the arba minim, you also can't add to them. So again, this issue of kind of you can't like if you don't have an esrog, you can't use another fruit. You can't like add on random fruits. You also can't take away from them. Peshitta, this is obvious. Like Torah says, these are the four things you take. Like it should be obvious that you don't bring something else instead, or you don't kind of forget one of them. So mahu detema hoel v'omor Rabbi Yehuda lulav tzorach eged v'imesi mina achwina hai lechuda kai v'hai lechuda kai. So what you might say is that since we said previously that Rabbi Yehuda said that if your lulav needs to be tied up, then you can tie it up, but you can't tie it up with any other minim. You have to tie it up with a piece of the lulav. Then what you could say is if I have my lulav, which is all tied up and kind of everything is bound together, and then I have this other random fruit in my hand that's not an esrog but is a pomegranate, because it's not part of like the lulav bundle, and it's separate to that, it's not considered, like I have my lulav in one hand, and that's kind of considered one thing, and then I have my rounds of pomegranate in the other hand, and that's considered a separate thing. And so I'm not adding on to the mitzvah, I just happen to be holding a lulav in one hand and a pomegranate in another hand. So you might say that that would be fine. Kamash Malan, no. It tells us specifically that you can't add different fruits in, specifically to teach us this, this point. So again, we're still proving that Rabbi Hudin needs an esrog to be nice, but again, we're going to go back up and talk about another statement that we just made. Omama lo motza esrog lo yovi lo rimen velo perish velo devar acha. So again, we said above that if you can't find an esrog one year, you can't bring a pomegranate or a quince or any other fruit. Peshitta, this is also obvious. Like the Torah says, you bring one fruit. The rabbis say that's an esrog. Like, why would you think you could bring something else? Like, it should be obvious. Mahu datima leisiki hechi shelo tishkach toras esrog kamash malan. So you might say that in this situation, while we can't find any esrog, there's just none around that year, and we like can't find one at all, we bring another fruit so that we remember there's supposed to be something else with the lulav. This year it's a pomegranate because we can't find an esrog, but just to remember that there should be, like, we should be bringing the lulav and a different fruit as well. But no, this is to teach us that we're not concerned about people forgetting an esrog. We're more concerned with people thinking that it's okay for them to bring a pomegranate instead of an esrog. And the Gemara says that explicitly now. Zimnim denofik chorva mine d'osi lemesurach. Like, this could, if we let people bring other fruit, if they can't find an esrog and we let them bring other fruits, then they might think the next year, even if they could get hold of an esrog, they might think, oh, last year I bought a pomegranate, so this year it's also okay for me to bring a pomegranate. And we're more concerned about that than about the fact that if people don't have, they just have a lulav and don't have a fruit, they might forget about bringing a fruit. Okay, so now we've addressed those two statements, we're going to come back to this kind of Rabbi Yehuda problem once and for all, and we're going to solve it. Tashma esrog hayoshon posel, Rabbi Yehuda machshe. So an esrog which is old is posel, but Rabbi Yehuda says it's fine, which implies that he doesn't need it to be beautiful, because old esrogim, kind of, again, when they dry up, they don't look so beautiful. Tiyifta de Rava, tiyifta, this is like a valid refutation of Rava, who said that everyone agrees that an esrog needs to look beautiful. We've just proved that Rabbi Yehuda clearly doesn't think that it needs to look beautiful. What are we doing now? Okay, fine, yeah, so even now, even though the Gemara has just come to a conclusion, kind of we've said that Rava is valid, we still have, the Gemara still has one more concern that it wants to deal with. So Rabbi, so we're asking again, does he really not need it to look beautiful? So it just kind of seems that this bit is a bit out of order. Like, we should have all of the questions and then the conclusion, but instead what we have is a conclusion, and then we have just one more thing almost that we need to like tie up, that the Gemara kind of seems to have forgotten about before and is now bringing as an issue which we're gonna have to solve. So we're still asking, are we sure that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need his esrog to be beautiful? We taught Hayorik Kakarti, if you have an esrog which is as green as a leek, Rabbi Meir Machshev, Rabbi Yehuda Posel. Rabbi Meir said it's fine, but Rabbi Yehuda Poseled it. So love Mishim to Bar Yehuda, is this not because he said that an esrog needs to be beautiful and a yellow esrog is more beautiful than a green one? Lo Mishim de lo goma pera. No, he poseled it when it's green, because if it's green it hasn't ripened properly yet. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that if the esrog isn't properly ripe yet, then it's not considered an esrog. Like, it still needs to be properly ripe before you can use it for the mitzvah. So it's not to do with what it looks like, it's to do with kind of the stage of its growth. Tashma, and we're going to bring a proof for how we know that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned with things like the stage of growth of the esrog rather than what the esrog looks like, by bringing another case where he's concerned about it. So Shia esrog koton, so what's the minimum size of the esrog? Rabbi Meir Omer Ka'egos, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kabeitzas. Rabbi Meir says it needs to be the size of an almond. Rabbi Yehuda says it needs to be the size of a kabeitzah. I love Mishim to Bar Yehuda. So again, isn't this to do with the esrog looking beautiful? If it's too small, it's not as beautiful as if it's a bit bigger. Lo Mishim to Lo Goma Pera. So again, the same reason. It's nothing to do with what the esrog looks like. It's to do with how grown it is. And if it's too small, then Rabbi Yehuda thinks it hasn't grown to the point where it's halachically considered to be an esrog, and therefore you can't use it for the mitzvah. Tashma. Again, we're bringing another proof where we're trying to say that Rabbi Yehuda cares about the about what it looks like. of our godol, what's the maximum size? What's the maximum size of the esrog? Kadeshia echus shnayim biyodo achas devar Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says you have to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand. Rabbi Yossi emar afilo echad b'shtei yodov. Rabbi Yossi says no, you have to be able to hold one in both hands. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to be able to hold two in one hand. According to Rabbi Yossi, you need to, if it's bigger than both of your hands, then it's not, then it's too big. So again, the familiar question, my time, I love Mishim to Bali Hoda. What's Rabbi Yehuda's reason? Is it not because he wants it to look beautiful? If you have this huge mass of esrog which you can't even hold on to properly, like that's not as nice and kind of convenient for when you're doing the mitzvah. That's not kind of the best way to do the mitzvah, because then you're going to be worried about whether or not you can hold it. So is that not to do with kind of what it looks like? Lo came under Omar Rabba, Lilov Biyamim, the esrog Bemismal. Zimnon de Machalife le, for Osila of Hinehu, for Osila of Sule. Yeah, so no, Rabbi Huda's opinion is that since Rabba says that when you're taking the Arba Minim, you have your Lulav in your right hand and the Esrog in the left hand, and then sometimes you need to kind of swap them, or kind of you only have two hands to hold these things on. So if you're kind of juggling, if your esrog is bigger than your hand and you're kind of trying to juggle it with the lulav, then you're very likely to drop it, and then you might pussel it. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you need to be able to hold it in your hand just for convenience reasons, for kind of practicality, so that when you're, I don't know, walking around doing hakafas, or you're kind of standing in halal shaking your lulav, you can hold your lulav in one hand, your esrog in the other hand, and you don't have to be concerned about whether your esrog is too big to hold and you're going to drop it. Okay, but then the Gemara has like the final question on Rabbi Yehuda, which is quite a big one. The Elul Rabbi Yehuda Hakasev Hoda. The Pasuk says you need to bring a pre-ate Hoda. So if Rabbi Yehuda, which is referring to the Esrog, so if Rabbi Yehuda says the Esrog doesn't need to be beautiful, what does he do with the word in the Pasuk that says the Esrog needs to be beautiful? So Hahu Hoda bit Elonu Mishana Lashana. So he reads the word a bit differently, and he reads the word as like Hadar, something that like stays on the tree from year to year. So kind of this idea that the esrog kind of will stay on the tree, kind of the fruit that you need to bring with the lulav is a fruit that will stay on the tree, and that fruit is an esrog. So it has nothing to do with what it looks like, it's got to do with kind of how it's growing.
Just I missed it, what does la'afu chinhu mean?
Like he might drop the esrog, he'll come to drop the esrog.
Thanks.
Okay, so after that very long discussion, we are going back to the Mishnah very briefly. So the Mishnah said, after it says you can't use a stolen lulav or a dried out lulav, it says you also can't use a lulav that's from an Asherah tree, which was used for idol worship, or from an Ir Hanadachas, which is the city where everyone serves idols, and therefore the city is has a din of having to be destroyed. So you can't use a lulav from that city. So we're just going to deal with that very quickly. V'shal Asherah posel, is it true that a lulav from an Asherah tree is posel? V'ha'omar Rava, but Rava taught, lulav shal avodah zorah lo yitel. A lulav that has like been used for, or like associated with avodah zorah, you can't use it. V'im notal kosher, but b'diavad, if you did use it, it's fine, like you've still done the mitzvah of lulav. So if Rava is saying that you can b'diavad use a lulav that's been associated with avodah zorah for your mitzvah, why does the Mishnah say it's just completely possible? The Mishnah should say you shouldn't use it, but if you do, it's fine. So what's the difference between the Asherah tree and the Mishnah and the avodah zorah that Rava is talking about? So Hocha ba'Asherah demoshas kinan. So in the Mishnah, it's talking about an Asherah tree that was planted in Israel during the time of Moshe, dekutiti michtas shireha, and its size is like it's crushed. So what this means is that when the Jewish people go into the land of Israel, they're given the command to destroy all of the avodah zorah in the land. That's what Hashem tells them explicitly. And there's a principle which is used in various places, which is kol ha'omed lisruf, Because, sorry, if Domi, anything which has a decree that it needs to be destroyed, sometimes the halacha views it as having already been destroyed. So this Asherah tree, the Jewish people have been told, when you go into the land of Israel, you have to destroy it. Therefore, it's considered as being destroyed. And therefore, if you take its branch and use it as a lulav, it's as if you're like not using anything. You haven't even done the mitzvah. It's not that you have used apostle lulav. It's that you haven't even done anything at all, because the tree is considered as not existing. So even though it like physically does exist, halachically it doesn't, and therefore you can't use it because you haven't done anything with it. Dekonomi dekatani dumya de erhanadechas shmamina. And we can also see that this is the case from the Mishnah, because the Mishnah compares the Asherah to the erhanadechas. So both of them have this decree of having to be destroyed. So it's got nothing to do with the Avodah Zorah aspect of the Asherah. It's got to do with the fact that the Asherah tree, like the Eir HaNedachas, is something which is supposed to be destroyed. Therefore, halakhically, it's considered as if it is destroyed, and therefore you can't use it because halakhically it doesn't exist. We then go on and quote the next bit of the Mishnah. So I'm going to stop there.
Thank you.
That really
thank, sense. You. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll stop it.